Hello, and welcome to another episode of the All Angles podcast. Today, we're delighted to welcome Genevieve Gilroy onto the podcast. She's the sector lead for consumer staples and also covers the semiconductor industry, which is where we'll spend most of our time today. In this conversation, Genevieve talks about how to stay calm during the hype cycle, how to think through risk-reward trade-off, the types of questions that she asks management as she passes through regime shift in the AI and semiconductor space, and she has a wonderful book recommendation for us towards the end. AI is a space that is front of mind for so many of our clients, asset allocators, portfolio managers, and just about everyone in the world at the moment. So this is a really timely and relevant conversation, and I hope you take something from it. Welcome, Genevieve.
Thank you.
A tradition on the show is just to learn a little bit more about you. So I'd love it if you could give us a bit of a potted history about yourself. How did you get here to do the things that you're doing now?
Well, I actually have spent my entire career at MFS. I started at MFS right out of Boston University in our Equity Research Associate program. I worked on the consumer staples team, and it was really at MFS that I discovered a love for investing with so many people that I worked with at the firm that were so inspirational in terms of finding how incredible this career opportunity could be. I was in that role for about 3.5 years before moving into the analyst role, initially covering protein processors, so very value-oriented, working a lot with our mid-cap team, our small-cap team, super cyclical businesses, and learned a ton about thinking through normalized earnings and a lot of different valuation approaches. And then I eventually added on non-alcoholic beverages, so Coke and Pepsi, and again, working much more with the core teams, the large-cap international teams, so really broadening the horizons. And then about 3 years after that, I joined the technology sector team and now cover all things semiconductor across large cap, small cap, across the software that is used to design semiconductors to the capital equipment that's used to manufacture the semiconductors, and work really closely with our global team covering that space. And it's been, of course, a very exciting number of years for that space.
That's amazing. So on the face of it, though, you've got consumer staples, beverages, non-beverages. You and I have discussed Coke and Pepsi or plastics, and I learned a tremendous amount, and that feels like a whole podcast episode on itself. So we'll plant the flag there to maybe invite you back again. And semiconductors, so they seem very different disciplines, and yet you're talking about kind of connected. I'm just curious, is there anything that you think distinguishes those spaces or anything kind of consistent thread philosophically that you look at when you're looking at where to allocate capital, what wins, how you think about competitive positioning, any of those themes that sort of translate across, or are they very, very different spaces and you have to think very differently and have a whole different set of mental models around them?
A major difference as I think about consumer staple, and from a very high level, as I think about investing behind semiconductors versus investing behind consumer staples, is just how we think about duration and confidence in duration. So as you think about consumer staples, that's a space that has been characterized over many, many years for advertising and very long periods of advertising leading to duration of the brands, right? And the value and the multiple that you put on that duration is very high. There's very high confidence and there's low cyclicality in those businesses, and they've earned a high multiple for that reason. And so when I compare that to semiconductors, it's interesting because across technology, that's a space that's characterized by lack of duration, right? This is a space that's consistently at threat of disruption, right? And so the technology is constantly changing and also characterized by cyclicality, right? So unlike consumer staples, which are characterized by, you know, even in a year of a recession, you know, we would generally expect, you know, maybe flattish revenue growth for consumer staples. Across semiconductors, every 3 to 4 years, you could have booms and busts that are difficult to predict, right? And so that space, as we look across it, much more attractive growth long term, but also you're consistently dealing with the risk of medium term lack of confidence in fundamentals and much longer term lack of confidence in fundamentals, just given the duration risk from the threat of technology disruption. So it's a really interesting contrast of groups to cover. I would say one area that has actually helped me as I've thought about my semiconductor coverage was really my first coverage that I ever had at MFS, which was covering the protein processors and the grain traders, right? And I worked a lot with our small cap and mid cap team to really think through how do I think about normalized earnings and how do I think about valuing cyclical businesses. And so I think that's maybe an unexpected space where there's been some leveraged learnings in terms of how to think about valuation of groups that are not necessarily what you would intuitively think as similar.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. That's so insightful. And maybe we'll come back to sort of other lessons learned through time in both spaces. But given you're talking about some of the characteristics of the cyclicality, the kind of constant disruption, I do want to sort of zoom in on the semiconductor space. So AI is so front of mind for so many people right now, with obviously the explosion after the large language models, ChatGPT in particular. Everyone's talking about AI. You can't avoid it. How is it sort of playing out in your space? There's so many prevailing narratives around how people and investors in particular should think about this, whether there's going to be much more of a winner-take-all mindset or whether it's understanding who the picks and shovels are in the space and making sure you get exposure to different things. How are you thinking about it? How has the euphoria impacted your kind of coverage and the way that you maybe think about risk and opportunity from here on out?
Absolutely. And just thinking through how AI has levered through the entire tech space. I mean, of course, it was completely unexpected when it came out and has driven an explosion in interest across cloud service providers, across enterprises, across consumers. And I think everyone is really figuring out the long-term implications from all of this. And so it's interesting, as a global technology sector team, as we, you know, initially approached this explosion in interest, what we were really looking for is trying to dissect across different business models, just exactly what you're speaking to, which is just how this would impact companies differently. And, you know, as we talk about software businesses, you know, there were some questions around, is this disruptive to the software business model? Is this a positive for the software business model? And there were a lot of questions. And I think there were questions across enterprises, just how is this going to flow through and impact their business models? And the one place that it was interesting, where as we looked at it, it was really only a positive, was semiconductors, right? And so right now, of course, we're seeing that with NVIDIA, just the largest earnings inflection in terms of magnitude in the history of business, really. But there's many, many companies throughout my semiconductor space that are also benefiting from this explosion in training of large language models. So thinking through the networking chips that are going into these data centers, the memory that is going into these data centers, and a whole host of other products that are being designed into the servers that are training these models. And also even thinking through just, you know, all of this really is an extension of Moore's Law slowing, right? So as you think through why we're utilizing GPUs, it really is because they are an extension of bringing compute progress forward, because Moore's Law has slowed and is no longer giving us the performance impact that we've needed. We're seeing compute fragment away from the Intel CPU into GPUs, into custom chips that many of these cloud service providers are talking about. We're looking through, you know, how those custom chips, as a derivative of Moore's Law slowing, could be benefiting other companies. So thinking through, you know, this is a positive for the design software that is used to design semiconductors. If we have a greater amount of chips proliferating away from the CPU, then that's a positive for design software. And of course, all of this is also a positive for the companies that manufacture semiconductors. So thinking through the foundries, or even the capital equipment that is put into a foundry or put into a semiconductor manufacturing facility. And so really a lot of the work has been, you know, as we compared semiconductors relative to certain other spaces, the confidence that this would be a long-term positive for these businesses is pretty high, and looking through places where that opportunity may be long-term underappreciated.
Mm. I want to get to what you think might be long-term underappreciated. But just, I wonder if it's maybe a small step back. So you talk about, this is a space that is used to disruption. It's kind of prone and privy to disruption. Yet we've got sort of a regime shift happening within the space. Moore's Law is slowing. You've seen sort of some of these sort of exponential kind of hockey sticks around groups like NVIDIA or other spaces around it. How do you and you mentioned the sort of technology team, is there any sort of change in the way you're processing? How do you think about that space in the middle of a regime change and inflection point? And again, you know, we could talk about in other domains, sort of you can see that maybe in healthcare or in the past in other sector teams as well. So I'm just kind of curious just as a small step back, how you as a team might analyze risk and return differently, recognizing that we're under the ground is sort of shifting underneath your feet, right? Like we're in the middle of this regime shift of how we might think about it. And I'm sure I want to get into what company management are talking to you about, but I'm sure they've all got a wonderful story about how they're playing it. And how do you decipher as you're doing that due diligence what is real and who's going to sort of win in that space and what might need a bit more work in terms of a competitive moat or a business plan? So any thoughts there in terms of what the team has been focused on in terms of risk and return or engagement, or how you think about questioning corporate management around some of these themes?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of this space is moving at breakneck speeds. And if we were to plan out what is the ultimate, you know, market size for all of these chips that are supporting AI, if I look out 5 years and I think through what are all of the assumptions that go into what that would look like, it is incredible just thinking through, you know, from a units perspective, from a price perspective, from a market share perspective, from a gross margin perspective, the range of outcomes across so many companies that I cover, particularly for NVIDIA, is wider than it ever has been in history, right? And so really, you know, what we're trying to do as a team is, you know, talk to as many companies as possible, talk to as many experts and talk to each other and really just think through range of outcomes. How wide could that really be across all of these businesses? And respect within valuation that just given the range of outcomes across every variable at this incredibly evolving period of time is so wide, respecting that within valuation and respecting the difference in range of outcomes across companies, right? And so thinking through, again, there are many businesses that are benefiting within semiconductors from AI. But, you know, one example is NVIDIA, right? But there's many, many questions around, you know, thinking through, you know, right now, all of this GPU spend going to NVIDIA has been driven by the training of large language models. Eventually, we're going to move to a place where the querying of the large language models, actually typing in your question to ChatGPT and having it send back an answer, all of that is what's going to drive semiconductor spend. And so, you know, we don't know at this stage just how large that will be relative to how many GPUs have been needed to train all these huge models. And again, you know, competition is entering, right? So AMD, Intel, even companies like Microsoft, OpenAI are designing their own chips. So the confidence that we can have long term in market share, the range of outcomes is just very wide, right? Mm-hmm. And so and that has implications for prices and for gross margins, right? And so as I think about a company like NVIDIA, again, the range of outcomes is so wide relative to thinking through, you know, the software, for example, the opposite of that would be the software that is used to design semiconductors. So benefiting from, you know, companies like AWS, Microsoft, Meta, designing their own chips and having that be a tailwind to long-term growth, but with much, much smaller range of outcomes, mm-hmm. right? And so thinking through, you know, just different approaches to valuation for businesses where that range of outcomes is so high and really trying to stay anchored in that risk reward that we think through and comparing that across coverages across our global teams.
It's really powerful to think about how you stay disciplined in this kind of moment of change is the most important thing rather than abandoning all your models and just sort of going with the prevailing narrative. I guess two variables that are moving around that also maybe exacerbate the range of outcomes, at least in the popular narrative. And Genevieve, tell me how you think about this. But one is sort of geopolitics. So lots of people are talking about deglobalization, about onshoring, about supply chain diversification, et cetera, and about how we don't want sort of fragility in the system by clustering either production, manufacture, or shipping of semiconductors in one or two locations around the world. Is that something that you'll see come through? You talked about how some of these companies are starting to sort of insource their own sort of chips and their own GPUs. Is that something that you're seeing, paying attention to? Is that, again, is that people entering a new space where presumably harder for you to get some confidence around their competitive edge, but equally hopefully diversifying a potential risk over an extended time horizon that hopefully makes you feel better? So how do you square those things?
I think risk around deglobalization has been one of the topics that we've focused on the most as a global team over the last several years. And it is interesting across my space because I think semiconductors are the space where that has one of the biggest impacts across the market. And the reason for that is that it is among the most globalized industries to begin with. And as you think through every single step of the supply chain, starting with the semiconductor design companies, which are centralized in the United States, the capital equipment companies, which are, you know, some are in the United States, some are in the Netherlands, some are in Japan. And you think through the companies manufacturing semiconductors, largely TSMC out of Taiwan. And all of the chemicals that are used in the semiconductor manufacturing process are from all around the world. And really, it's a space where so many small niches, because this space is so difficult. What really has been a more successful business model is a very focused R&D engine, right? So focusing either on the design, focusing on the design of the manufacturing equipment, focusing on the process technology like TSMC does. These are businesses that are highly focused in whatever niche they play in the semiconductor industry. And that's led to an incredibly diverse supply chain. And it's so interconnected with one another. It would be such a challenge for any one of these large businesses to be pulled out of the system because they are so interconnected. And so really what the process has been like for us has been understanding and thinking through just the financial statements, understanding if geopolitical tensions were to escalate or even remain status quo, just what does that mean from a unit space for certain companies like the analog players like Texas Instruments and ADI? These are companies who sell a considerable amount of their semiconductors to Chinese customers, right? So thinking through, is that a risk long term from market share standpoint, from a unit share standpoint, if Chinese companies are increasingly designing in Chinese semiconductors over the American players? And then thinking through manufacturing, right? So to what extent are companies manufacturing exclusively in one location or one geography? What does that look like from a cost perspective if they need to diversify? Does there exist enough capacity elsewhere in the world to appropriately diversify, right? And I think for some companies like the analog players versus leading edge semiconductors, it's very, very hard for a company like Apple to diversify away from a company like TSMC, given their chips are of an advanced technology that only TSMC can do, whereas, you know, some of the older chips can be more effectively diversified away. What are the CapEx implications of diversifying away from a concentrated manufacturing footprint, right? Are there CapEx implications for the company? Are there CapEx implications for the foundries, right? And would that be a net positive for, you know, the capital equipment companies that are selling to those foundries? And again, it all comes full circle, you know, from the capital equipment companies thinking through, are Chinese capital equipment companies going to increasingly be taking share within China? So it's an incredibly intricate set of questions that we have that we're consistently talking to with every company. And I think it affects these businesses everywhere from a unit, a price, a margin perspective, a CapEx perspective, and trying to compare across each of these businesses and really understand where we're exposed.
That's such a powerful example. When we think about on this show, sometimes we talk about stewardship and engagement and ask for examples. And what you've just described there, it sort of perfectly captures what many of our guests often talk about, which is the subtlety and the nuance. And you, to use your word, it's very intricate sometimes, a set of questions that you have to think about and appreciate that company is responding in a particular type of context that you then have to sort of take into account and view the bigger picture sort of more end to end. Which is really, really interesting as you drew that sort of chain for us in our mind in terms of how things go from sort of beginning to end of that. Another variable that sometimes, I guess, moves the needle and often gets discussed in this space is sort of energy or power. Net zero commitments and sort of climate change often sort of front of mind for many investors and governments and regulators. Sometimes what gets brought up is the energy requirement for quantum computing, for crypto, for some of these other spaces where many of these semiconductors get used. Is that something that you think about in your analysis? Where does that feature in terms of materiality for you when you're looking at a semiconductor name, for example?
Absolutely. I mean, It is really interesting because power is of the utmost importance to all of these companies, and thinking through all of the cloud service providers that are developing these large language models, all of these models are limited by power. They are power constrained. So power consumption to them is a sustainability focus, but it also is critical to their business model, right? And so as we think through, you know, what has driven the transition to utilizing NVIDIA's GPUs over the traditional CPUs, part of that has really just been that power limited aspect of compute. Really, what NVIDIA's GPUs are doing is accelerating one single workload, offloading traditional compute to take on that one single workload in a way that can, you know, on a constant basis, for constant costs, can use considerably less power than traditional compute would. And so I think power is, you know, incredibly important to all these cloud service providers. And what we're seeing from semiconductor companies is an enormous focus on power, driving power down, how to manage around flowing as efficiently through the compute system. So it's something we focus on from a sustainability perspective, but also just from a business model perspective for these companies.
That's really cool. I was just thinking about all of this and how much it's moving so fast. And maybe for our listeners, we should sort of date stamp today's conversation as being January 24, and especially in the context of geopolitics, as you mentioned, sort of Taiwan Semiconductors or TSC, just acknowledging that we've just had the Taiwanese election that happened and the results. And to your point on, even if the geopolitical tension remained at status quo as we are here today, there's still ramifications for businesses and for sentiment and for how companies are going to react to the kind of current environment. So the last question as we think about this particular area of your coverage, Genevieve, and you talked about, you know, how you think long-term, what's going to be differentiated. You talked about range of outcomes, how you think about your engagement activity and how you integrate some of these issues. Is there anything that you would say differentiates your view or your team's view, the team's view, versus maybe some of the prevailing market sort of wisdom or narratives? Anything that people should be thinking differently? One of the great investors that maybe in this space, Peter Thiel, often asks the question, you know, what do you believe that no one else believes in this space? Is there anything that you and the team believe or think about that very few other people are paying attention to?
I think we're likely paying attention to all of the same things. But really, I think what differentiates the way that I've been thinking about it is focusing and being anchored in valuation and really staying away from the hype. I mean, this is really a space. Semiconductors have always been a space that tends to trade peak multiple on peak earnings and trough multiple on trough earnings, right? And this is a space that tends to get very excited and overexcited at the hype of the cycle, and not just the AI cycle, but, you know, any kind of traditional semiconductor inventory cycle, and then tends to get very, very bearish at the bottom of the cycle. Valuations tend to move to trough levels. And so I think what we've been really trying to anchor to is really thinking through that risk reward, really anchoring in what we can know versus what we can't know in this ever evolving period of time. And again, just staying anchored in the risk reward, not getting wrapped up in the hype, but truly understanding and digging into each of these businesses and understanding what truly could be the potential opportunity versus risk across these businesses.
Thank you for sharing that. Be interested in how you stay calm throughout the hype cycle. But I want to move to sort of fun facts at the end, if you'll humor us. So we have a few questions for some of our guests, just to get to know you a little bit better. Outside of MFS, when you're not thinking about the one weird and wonderful world of semiconductors or protein businesses or consumer staples, what are you devoting your time to?
I would say I love taking long walks with my dog. She's 3 years old, and we love to just go through the woods, center ourselves in nature, and really just find that peace and breathe that fresh air in the effort of continuously remaining calm and peaceful. So that's always been very helpful. I love to read. I spend a lot of time reading, and again, just in the effort of centering and learning. So that's probably what I spend the most of my time doing.
Nice. What on reading? What is the book, article, podcast, piece of literature that you've recommended the most?
Yeah, it was probably a book that I read this year. It's called The Overstory by Richard Powers. And I know a few of my colleagues have read it as well and spoke very admirably about it. And I would encourage anybody to pick it up because it really made me think about many of these questions surrounding climate change and our ecosystem in a very different way in terms of the responsibilities that we have to each other and also to all of the other organisms that really live on this planet. So it really stretched the way that I think about the issue of climate change and the issues that are facing, you know, all of the elements of natural capital that we have on the planet and really, really touched me.
That's beautiful. That's something very close to my heart. So we'll add that definitely to the list. Genevieve, what's the kindest thing someone's done for you?
You know, quite frankly, I'll think about this from a career perspective, but I mean, I think one of the things that sticks out to me in my career was, and which is also my life as well, which is the mentorship that I think I've received from people here at MFS. And there are a few specific people that stick out, but so many people in terms of really creating that bug for me for investing in stocks. You know, I started at MFS as someone who wasn't totally sure what their place in this world would be. And there were a number of people who really went so far out of their way to, you know, actually take that time to sit down and teach. And I think that's among the most kind thing that someone has done for me and has had, you know, long-term implications. So,
great. Thank you for sharing that. Well, Genevieve, thank you so much for spending the time with us today. I appreciate, with the amount of disruption going on in your space, that taking the time out to talk about what you're doing, I think, means a lot to us. And that generosity of your time with our listeners is really important. But actually, you know, you've shared a tremendous amount of insights in terms of how you think about it, the right questions to ask, how to stay calm through the hype cycle, both peak and trough, and to sort of stay disciplined on the process with the team. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
The views expressed are those of the speaker and are subject to change at any time. These views are for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a recommendation to purchase any security or as an offer of securities or investment advice. No forecast can be guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results.